Hey, Trey here. Two things. First, I'm not sure if you know it, but Us and Them was honored with four Associated Press Broadcasters Awards, including one for excellence in public service through journalism. Second, it's the time for the Spring Pledge Drive at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And if you value the work that our Us and Them team does in telling the stories about the things that divide Americans, would you consider making a pledge of support to West Virginia Public Broadcasting? You can call or text to 1-800-RADIO-87, or you can go online to WV Public and find the little red button at the upper right-hand corner. And when you pledge, let them know where you live and that you're a listener of Us and Them. Doing this would be a big help for our show and the other great programming at West Virginia Public Broadcasting. And thank you so much. I remember being in grade school one fall, third grade, I think it was, and a note went home to our parents that everyone in the school would get vaccinated for rubella. My folks signed the permission slips and shots would be in a few weeks. Now, earlier that year, I'd been very sick and I was in the hospital for a couple of weeks and they didn't know what was wrong with me. And to find out what was going on, there were a lot of tests with lots of needles. And as a result, I developed a profound fear of them. I mean, to tell you the truth, still to this day, needles freak me out. The day of the shot, I remember all the kids lining up to walk down the hall and into the lunchroom, where nurses were administering the shot with an injection gun. And the nurse would take that gun and punch a bit of the vaccine in every kid's upper arm. And when it was my turn, I just couldn't do it. I remember the school nurse trying to talk me into it, but I just wouldn't budge. I remember her being really nice and kind before, but after I continued to refuse the shot, she angrily marched me back to my classroom. And when we got there, she shoved me down to the seat of my desk and then ripped up the papers that were to go back to my parents to tell them how the shot had gone. And I remember all the kids staring at me, and some of them giggled. I was humiliated. I was the kid who wasn't vaccinated. From West Virginia Public Broadcasting and PRX, this is Us and Them. It's the podcast where we tell stories from America's culture divides. I'm Trey Kay. Full disclosure, my mother took me to the doctor and I did get a rubella shot. Although I have no memory of doing that, but as you now know, I do have a very full and vivid memory about not getting a shot at school. I recalled this story because I've thought a lot about vaccinations over the years. When I first started imagining and planning the Us and Them program, I remember thinking about the issues that we'd dig into. And some of the topics that we'd cover would fall on either side of the conservative-progressive divide. But we are also really interested in conversations about issues that don't necessarily break along the typical left-right, conservative-liberal fault lines. We want to consider issues where those positions blur. And we're curious about topics that make for strange bedfellows. And when we discuss things that were of this nature, one of the first things that popped in my mind was vaccinations. In my experience of talking to people on either side of the culture divide, opinions on childhood vaccinations bring together people who wouldn't agree on religion and politics or much else. But for whatever reason, they agree on this. I recently read an op-ed on the wonderful website 100 Days in Appalachia, and it was about vaccinations in West Virginia and Mississippi. Now, those are two states with some unenviable positions on national rankings. Both states have high poverty rates and low education achievement scores. They also have higher rates of cancer, addiction, overdose, and premature mortality than the rest of the country. However, this article spotlights West Virginia and Mississippi as national leaders for something unexpected: vaccinating children against contagious diseases. The article interested me so much that I wanted to speak with the author. Today, Jamie Lynn Crofts joins me. She's a constitutional civil rights attorney in Charleston, West Virginia. Previously, she was legal director for the ACLU of West Virginia and is now in private practice. Jamie Lynn's article looks at the laws that govern vaccination requirements. And while some people may debate the medical science of vaccinations, it's state laws that set out the legal language. And the laws are very different from one state to another. So how did you get interested in the state laws that cover vaccinations?
Well, there are a few different ways. This has always been kind of a pet issue of mine. And I also have a cousin who has two young children who lives in Seattle. She happens to be a doctor, and she's always very concerned about the fact that her children could get sick. But as a civil rights lawyer, it's these state laws that really interest me and are really right up my alley.
Not that long ago, contagious diseases were a public health threat. How successful have vaccines been at containing or eliminating them?
Incredibly successful. Smallpox, for example, has been completely eradicated worldwide. Until recently, measles was considered eradicated from both North and South America.
Well, you mentioned the measles. As a kid, I remember a time before there was an available measles vaccine. In fact, before the vaccine became available in the 1960s, the CDC said that all kids under 15 got the measles. So there was a lot of concern about that disease back then. But when my son was growing up, and he's 21 now, but when he was growing up, I don't remember hearing about many of his peers having the measles.
For the last two decades, measles has been basically eradicated from the United States because of the efficacy of the vaccine. The measles, mumps, and rubella vaccine, I know you mentioned rubella at the top of the show,
right.
That's part of the measles vaccine that our school children receive. It's 97% effective when it's administered correctly. And the efficacy of that vaccine can be seen in the fact that until very recently, with the rise of the anti-vaccination movement, we haven't had measles in the United States.
Well, okay, but we're like in the first quarter of 2019, and I already see stories of measles outbreaks in other states. Well, what can you tell me about that?
Already in 2019, we have outbreaks going in six different states. The latest numbers from the CDC say that there have been 159 measles cases this year. And if that continues, we could see some really drastic numbers in the U.S. as far as measles this year.
Why are these numbers cropping up?
A big reason is that a lot of parents are concerned about vaccines and not vaccinating their children.
Where is this happening?
The biggest outbreak that we've seen so far is in Washington State, in the corner right near Portland, Oregon. There's also been another outbreak in Oregon this year. And we've also seen an outbreak in Illinois and two in New York.
I'm here with Jamie Lynn Crofts. She's my guest on this Us and Them conversation. She's an attorney specializing in constitutional and civil rights, and she practices here in Charleston, West Virginia. She's researched state laws that require childhood vaccinations and how they're different across the country. Now, Jamie, you mentioned vaccination laws playing a current role in the outbreak of measles in Washington State. What other reasons do parents give for not wanting to vaccinate their children?
It varies, but the main reason a lot of parents cite is that they believe vaccines can cause autism. Sometimes their reasons are based on religion, and sometimes they're just based on a belief or a dislike of vaccines. An Arizona legislator just recently said that they believed vaccines were communist.
Really?
Yes, a lawmaker in the state of Arizona. So it can really vary pretty widely. Vaccination laws vary by state, and there are a couple of different ways that they can vary. Every state except for West Virginia, Mississippi, and more recently California allows for a religious exemption for school children.
Okay.
So that means that, for example, Christian Scientists who don't believe in medical intervention can get an exemption and still send their kids to public school. Those three states have eliminated that religious exemption. There are also another 17 states that, in addition to their religious exemption, allow for what's called a personal belief exemption. And so that would cover things like a parent believing that vaccines cause autism.
I might be, you know, well, I'm not a medical person. I'm not a doctor, and you're not either. But just as you're kind of explaining it to me, how is it that vaccinations work to protect the public?
So the first way that vaccinations work is the obvious way. When you are vaccinated for something, you're likely inoculated.
You're
from
inoculated
the disease.
From, right. Okay.
The other way that vaccines work is through something that's called herd immunity. And there are always going to be people in every society who can't receive vaccinations for one reason or another. Infants who are too young, people who have compromised immune systems, either because of autoimmune disease or chemotherapy.
Okay.
And if a high enough percentage of the population is inoculated, it will protect those more vulnerable people from contracting the diseases.
What goes into creating the state laws, and who's involved?
The state laws are, you know, generally created by the state legislators. And again, that process varies a little based on the state. But generally, a new law would have to go through both houses of the legislature and then be signed by the governor of a state. And you're going to have a lot of special interest groups that are involved when it comes to an issue like vaccines, whether it's parents who are concerned about vaccines or doctors who are promoting them.
When you click on Jamie's opinion piece on the website 100 Days in Appalachia, there's a photo of parents protesting outside the state capitol in Olympia, Washington. There are moms holding babies and signs that say separate pharma and state. The parents are rallying against a proposed bill that would remove a philosophical exemption to the measles, mumps, and rubella vaccination for school-aged children.
Both Washington and Oregon, in light of the current outbreaks, are considering tightening their laws. And there has been a pretty big outcry in those two states of parents who want to stop those laws from being tightened.
Well, how about health officials and others? Are they involved?
Health officials are always involved. And in Washington, they've also declared a public health emergency because of the measles outbreak. They're going to be offering testimony and evidence to show the efficacy of vaccines and what they've helped accomplish.
What percentage of the population needs to be vaccinated to kind of have that herd protection kick in?
Generally, it's around 95%. It varies a little bit based on the specific disease.
I remember when I became a parent. My son was born back in the late 1990s. And at that time, there was a lot of concern among parents in my community about vaccinating our kids. There was a fear that you were putting your child at risk for autism. I had a good friend at the time whose son was autistic, and he was convinced that it was caused by the vaccination they'd given. I remember my wife and I having a conversation with the pediatrician to discuss the pros and cons of doing it, and ultimately we decided to do it. I asked Jamie Lynn why there was so much worry about vaccinations causing autism.
Well, it all really started with a study by the now former Dr. Wakefield, and that's...
He's not a doctor anymore?
He is not. He had his medical license revoked.
Okay.
but that study made a very compelling case that vaccines caused autism. That study was later entirely debunked. It has been revisited numerous times by people who, unlike myself, are medical public health professionals. No other study has ever found that type of correlation. And in fact, that study was later retracted and he lost his medical license.
What has the impact been of Wakefield's paper?
Unfortunately, the belief that vaccines cause autism is still pervasive today. You see people like Jenny McCarthy traveling the world and trying to encourage people not to vaccinate their children. She has an autistic child, and she firmly believes that it was caused by vaccines. Another reason that that belief persists is that parents and doctors can start to notice the signs of autism right around the age that children generally get their first vaccinations. And so there's really not any type of causation there, but parents see the correlation just because it happens to be at that same age.
We'll learn a little more after the break how vaccination laws in Mississippi, West Virginia, and California differ from other states, and how that affects state vaccination rates. I'm Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them, which is supported in part by the West Virginia Humanities Council, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation.
Music lifts us up and brings us together, even when we can't get together in person. Mountain Stage brings you live performances on the air, online, and in our podcast. They remind you how it feels to be in a live audience listening to live music. This is Larry Gross, host of Mountain Stage. Find a link to our stations and our podcast online at mountainstage.org.
I'm Trey Kay, and you're listening to Us and Them. I'm with Jamie Lynn Crofts, and she practices law in Charleston, West Virginia, focusing on constitutional and civil rights issues. She wrote a recent article for the website 100 Days in Appalachia that looks at the laws that govern vaccination requirements, laws that are different from one state to another. But you say that West Virginia and Mississippi are leaders in vaccination laws. I know here in West Virginia, there's, and I've heard this in other states, that there's bumper stickers and they'll say things, well, if it wasn't for Mississippi, we'd be last. You're smiling as I say that, but we've heard that before. What can you tell me about Mississippi and how it came to its laws with regard to vaccination?
It's actually a really fascinating case that went up to their state Supreme Court. So in the 1970s, Mississippi had a law that did allow for a religious exemption for vaccines, but you had to be a member of a denomination and have a religious leader sign off on it. And so a father challenged that law, saying it was unconstitutional because he shouldn't have to be a member of a denomination. And so he said, you know, I should be able to be exempted from this vaccine requirement, even though I don't have a religious leader to sign off on.
Okay.
And the case went up to the Mississippi Supreme Court, and they not only denied the man's request, they actually invalidated the religious exemption entirely.
Wow, that's an expansive ruling, right?
It was, but their reasoning was really fascinating, and also, frankly, something that impact litigation professionals like myself should think about when they're bringing their own cases. The court said that the religious exemption was unconstitutional because by not vaccinating their school children, these people were putting the rest of the state at risk.
Okay.
And so they said that this religious exemption actually violated the rights of all of the other people in the state who could get sick because these people didn't believe in vaccines.
I mean, that's really a fascinating story.
It is.
Okay, so we have Mississippi and how they came about their laws. Well, how did the laws come about in West Virginia?
Well, in West Virginia, we started allowing counties to set out their own guidelines for school children back in the 1800s. And our current scheme has been in place since around the 1970s, which is when a lot of these state laws started to proliferate. And we have never had any type of religious or philosophical exemption in our laws.
Both of these states seem to be effectively controlling diseases, but the laws seem very top down. In these times where there seems to be a good amount of distrust and antipathy directed towards government, are there efforts to continue to change these laws, to kind of challenge this top-down approach to vaccination policy?
Oh, of course. Every year, West Virginia and Mississippi see legislation introduced that would weaken their laws, generally by allowing some sort of religious or philosophical exemption. In Mississippi 2 years ago, one of those bills did start to move but was eventually shot down. But in both states, those efforts have been resisted, and neither state has allowed any type of weakening of their vaccination laws to go into effect.
You say that West Virginia and Mississippi have the strongest laws with regard to vaccinations. And yet you also say that in West Virginia, every year there is a challenge to weaken those laws, to make it so that people can claim exemptions, et cetera. How come those laws never kind of take hold?
Well, we always have doctors in charge of our health committees.
So you're saying that like the legislators, the people, you know, who run the legislature here in West Virginia, what they appoint physicians, people of science to actually chair these committees that have to do with public health?
Right. The Speaker of the House and the Senate President choose the chairs of the committees, and the chairs of the health committee here in West Virginia are always doctors, and they don't allow those bills to move forward in their committees.
And that would speak to why that these efforts to kind of soften the laws or weaken them have just never taken hold.
Exactly. If a bill can't get out of committee, it can't get to the floor, and it can't become law.
Do many other states have strict laws?
Well, in 2016, after the measles outbreak at Disneyland in Southern California, California removed their religious and philosophical exemptions and tightened their laws to look a lot more like West Virginia and Mississippi.
I find that really interesting. Several months ago, I was working on a project with producers at KCRW in Santa Monica, California, and we were trying to have a conversation between a red state like West Virginia and a more progressive liberal region like Southern California, and trying to have those regions have a better understanding of one another. And my take on West Virginians is that they felt that Californians were uniformly liberal and progressive and out of touch with the mainstream of America. And what we have here in the example that you give is that California took a very conservative action.
It did. It's something that I think a lot of people wouldn't have expected, that California was kind of modeling its law off of West Virginia and Mississippi, but that's where we were.
How would you consider the laws nationally? I mean, how many states have strict laws like West Virginia or Mississippi?
It's only West Virginia, Mississippi, and California that have these really strict laws. We are the only states in the country that do not allow for a religious exemption. So 47 other states do allow religious exemptions.
We talked about California, but are there other states who have lax laws, who are experiencing some type of health, public health problem, like Oregon and Washington are right now, that have taken action to kind of get their arms around this problem? And how are they doing that?
Well, a lot of state legislatures around the country are looking at their vaccination laws and considering tightening them. In both Washington and Oregon, the sites of the biggest current outbreaks, they're considering getting rid of their religious exemption and also their personal belief exemption. Again, this would be changing their laws to look more like those Appalachian laws in West Virginia and Mississippi.
And that's happening now, or that's being considered now in Washington state?
In both Washington and Oregon, yes.
Okay. And are there any other states that are considering changing their vaccination laws?
It's a hot topic at capitals around the country. In states like Arizona and Texas, legislators are talking about it, and it's something that the National Conference of State Legislatures is always looking at and updating their information on.
How do you see this playing out long term? I mean, there is suspicion and distrust in government with regard to public health policies, and that in a way that's not anything new. It seems like it's a balancing act going into the future. I mean, how do you see this playing out?
It's definitely a balancing act. And frankly, while there are some issues that I think should be regulated, I don't always fall on the side of the nanny state. Like you mentioned at the top of the show, this is an issue where you can find yourself both with strange bedfellows and people who are generally allies disagreeing with you. I completely understand distrust in the government. But when it comes to public health, we need to listen to public health experts. We don't need to listen to lawmakers. We need to listen to doctors and scientists. And places like the World Health Organization and the CDC and medical studies worldwide are very clear that vaccines are effective and safe. So as far as going forward, I think this is something that over the next several years, we're going to see a lot of states talking about. I'm hopeful that what we're going to see is states like Washington and Oregon following the lead of West Virginia and Mississippi and making it so they don't have things like huge outbreaks in small communities in their state. West Virginia and Mississippi haven't seen these kinds of measles outbreaks because we're so good at vaccinating our school children. Another thing that I think it's important to recognize is that mandatory vaccination laws don't require people to be vaccinated just to exist and live in the state. They target school children. And when you send your kids to school, if they're unvaccinated, they can infect all of the other kids there, or especially they can infect the kids there who have some kind of sickness or a compromised immune system and can't get the vaccinations themselves. So I'm hopeful that parents will start listening to public health officials, that legislatures will start listening to public health officials, and that we can really completely eradicate these contagious diseases from our society.
Okay.
You know, generally when I write something, I'll share it in a few Facebook groups that I'm a member of, and they're, you know, groups where people are pretty aligned politically. Most of the things I post, you know, will get a couple of likes, a couple of shares, and, you know, no real debate or arguments. But when I shared this one, there were some people who got really up in arms. There were people who don't vaccinate their children who got very angry at me for writing
it.
What
did they say?
You know, all sorts of names that I was called. You don't know what you're talking about. But again, like, the people who accuse me of not knowing what I was talking about, they're not doctors either. But really, there's a real passion there for people on both sides. And it's really interesting to see how it plays out, because you really can't guess based on someone's political views where they're going to come out on this.
Social media has provided the vaccination debate with a platform for high-profile exposure. The echo chamber sometimes helps us see and share only perspectives we agree with. And in this case, that is a challenge.
I think it's really dangerous that, and we're all doing this, I do this, we all consciously or unconsciously seek out confirmation bias.
Yeah.
We seek out people who agree with us. And so you can see, for example, on social media, all sorts of groups where people are sharing in the world of vaccines, information that is false. And that is really dangerous. On the other hand, the internet and social media have given us this great tool to share information and facts. So I think it's important for everyone when they're looking at, you know, the feed that they've curated or the news that they're consuming, to make sure that they're not only, for example, reading things they agree with.
That's why I've been interested in knowing, instead of looking at the people who oppose vaccinating their kids as dangerous kooks, what is it we can learn from them?
I think there are a few things we can learn. I think we can see the importance of political engagement. Even when I disagree with people, I love to see regular citizens going up to their lawmakers and talking to them about their concerns. I think that's something we need to see more of nationwide. Here in West Virginia, for example, it's a small state. If you go to the Capitol, you can talk to your senator and your delegate. I would love to see more of that. I think it's obviously important and wonderful that people care so much about their children. We want to see people engaged. Unfortunately, in this instance, it's in a way that's harming those children and also creating public health problems. But that's still a good value to have. Just because I disagree with someone doesn't mean that they're crazy. And just because someone believes something that isn't true, that doesn't make them crazy. This is the world we live in. We all receive misinformation. It's just important, and it's incumbent on each of us to make sure we're doing the research and getting the facts.
Jamie Lynn Crofts, I have been fascinated by your article, and I've really enjoyed this conversation today. Thank you so much for coming in and speaking with me.
Thank you for having me. This was really great.
Vaccinations are not just a medical question. There is much more at stake than whether to get a shot or not. It's a matter of individual and religious rights. Whether or not to vaccinate children from contagious diseases is also a matter of public health, and for many, a moral and ethical challenge. State laws impose different vaccination requirements, and they allow different exemptions. It's also a changing landscape as state lawmakers consider revisions to existing laws. What do you know about your state's vaccination laws? Are there personal or religious vaccination exemptions? How do you feel about the balance between the responsibility we all share to promote public health and each person's right to opt out? Can you let me hear from you through our Facebook page or Twitter at usthempodcast or via email trey@usandthempodcast.com? You can also connect with me at the West Virginia Public Broadcasting website, wvpublic.org. You've been listening to Us and Them. Our team for this show is me, Trey Kay, and Kate Smith. Special thanks to Ashton Mara of 100 Days in Appalachia. Michael Lipton and Tristan Lozow wrote and performed the Us and Them show music. Mark Lerner designed our logo. The wonderful people at PRX and West Virginia Public Broadcasting make Us and Them possible. So do grants from the West Virginia Humanities Council, the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the CRC Foundation, and the Daywood Foundation. Us and Them was originally developed with assistance from the mentorship program at AIR, the Association of Independents in Radio. We'll see you next time on Us and Them.
Support for this podcast comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting.